You're listening to AM 970, The Answer. And now, Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, the president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters. With us for the first time is the Speaker of the New York State Assembly, Carl E. Hastings. Welcome to Reaching Out.
Hey, Greg. Happy to be here.
Thank you. Well, we got you down from Albany and the Bronx. So before we begin, let's tell the people a little bit about your background, growing up, going to the Assembly, and then becoming Speaker.
Well, I've lived my entire life in my Assembly District, except for probably the years that I went to Stony Brook University. My background, I have a bachelor's degree in applied math and statistics from Stony Brook University, and I have an MBA in finance from Baruch College. Total product of public schools, big supporter of public schools, as I hope everyone can see and tell. I was a budget analyst in the New York City Comptroller's Office before I was elected. And I probably got my political, will. Even when I was younger, in elementary school, I used to try to run for class president. For those people listening, don't let failure ever stop you from your goal. I never won. I'm not even sure I voted for myself back then. The elections were so bad. But then also when I got to Stony Brook, I really got involved in student government. And then when I graduated, came home, got involved locally, started graduate school. Then there was a vacancy in the Assembly, and I ran for the Assembly. And then here we are 18 years later on Greg Floyd's show.
Well, 18 years later. I remember when you first got elected. I went up to the Albany caucus weekend, mm-hmm. and there you were, and we were sitting in the office. Lo and behold, did we and me ever know that you would become Speaker of the Assembly?
I had no idea, wasn't even thinking anything about that. I just wanted to come and do the right thing by the people who've elected me. Like I said, I have a unique relationship with my Assembly District because it's the only place I've ever lived.
Now, we would be remiss if we didn't bring up a subject that just came up. The former Attorney General of New York State resigned, mm-hmm. and there's a process to pick that person. In my lifetime, I can only remember one other time. That was when the state comptroller was, he had to resign because, and then you had to pick a state comptroller, mm-hmm. and that was Alan Hevesy.
Right.
And eventually that process bore out the current state comptroller, Tom DiNapoli. Previous to that, the Governor Spitzer resigned, but there's a process in place for that because there's a lieutenant governor.
Right.
Can you just go through the process of what happens now?
Sure. So let me just, there were a couple other instances where this has happened. This is how we also got Carl McCall when he became controller, when there was a vacancy. Ned Regan had decided to resign. And then also it happened with Oliver Capel, Robert Abrams, I believe, resigned. And what I think some of the editorial boards and some of the members of the media are failing to understand is in the Constitution, it says when there's a vacancy in the Attorney General's office or the Comptroller's office, it says the legislature shall appoint, which means it's not a may. If it said may, you don't have to do anything. But in my mind, we would be neglecting our Constitution responsibilities if we don't go through this process. People think, oh, it's just, 7 months. But the Attorney General's office had a lot of pressing issues going on, particularly with the Trump administration and as how it affects New York. So to say, oh, it's just 7 months, it's no big deal, I think is not the way to look at things. And when we decided to go forward with the process, I said to my counsel, we should reach out to Ms. Underwood and invite her as well. She has a wonderful and impeccable resume, but there's nothing wrong with the legislature, discussing with her what her plan is, what her vision
sure.
is for the next 7 months, whether she's going to continue the cases that that Eric Schneiderman had brought. So for anyone to think that there's some, backroom deal or some, there's none of that. But all we're doing is doing what the what the Constitution has instructed the legislature to do, which is to vet in question and appoint someone when there's a vacancy. The governor has if it's a vacancy for U.S. Senate, the governor has the right to fill that vacancy. And I'm sure if that happened, I'm sure the editorial boards wouldn't say to the governor, "Oh, just let that seat stay vacant. Don't talk to anyone." And that's all we're doing.
Is that vacancy if it was in the Senate? Is there a special election?
No, the governor has the right to to fill a vacancy. That's right. One of the constitutional rights that the governor has. So I just want people to, in the instance where you would want the governor to respect his constitutional right, just allow the legislature to respect its constitutional right. And I have no idea what we're going to do. And so you asked me to explain the process.
Yes, that's it.
So it's a joint ballot. If we were to want to appoint someone, it's a joint ballot between the Assembly and the Senate. We did invite the Senate majority to participate. They had initially said they would, but they declined. But now they say that they may again. So we put forward a panel, Elise, and I invited the Senate minority and the Assembly minority who will participate. And from our end, I've asked the chairs of Judiciary, GovOps, Codes, and Consumer Affairs, which is the lion's share of the Attorney General's job, those chairs who are very, masters of their own their own areas, and Joe Lentol, a senior member, Crystal People Stokes from Buffalo, a senior member, Matt Titone, the chair of Consumer Affairs from Staten Island, and Jeffrey Dinowitz, who's the chair of Judiciary from the Bronx. They will lead the Assembly's portion. There's the Assembly minority has recommended two people, and the Senate Democrats are going to do the same. And then we're going to have an open interview process. The members of the public, the media are welcome to attend. I believe we're going to live stream it. And
you're going to live stream?
Yes, we're going to live stream.
Okay, how can people watch online?
I would have to get back to you.
Okay.
Get back to you on that. I assume it'll be one of the Assembly or Senate
so we can
live stream channels.
Google it, or there'll be an announcement. Okay.
Because we want this to be. And remember, and the backdrop of all of this is the New York State Democratic and Republican conventions are coming. So this is even an added bonus, because maybe someone who may want to run for the full term, the public will now get an opportunity to hear what these potential candidates may want to say, their vision, their experience. So this is an opportunity not only for the legislature to get people to know people who want to fill the last 7 months of the term, but this also gives people an opportunity to get to know people who may want to run for it in the future.
Sounds like a inclusive process.
Yes.
I mean, this is more than I expected to hear today. I guess what you're saying is the New York State legislature is not the U.S. Congress, where they left a seat vacant for 14 months, Supreme Court justice appointment, and they just stalled and wouldn't give a vote.
Right. People are trying to accuse me of playing politics. I think if I didn't do my constitutional responsibility, I would then be playing politics. I'm not doing anything other than what the Constitution has instructed us to do when it says, when there's a vacancy in the Office of Attorney General Control, the legislature shall appoint. But some people say, let it stay. And like I said, I respect, I know the acting
Attorney
General. Yeah, Ms. Underwood. Acting Attorney General. She was appointed by Governor Cuomo. She was reappointed by Eric Schneiderman. I'm not questioning her.
No, because you included her in the interview.
I personally invited her to come. But again, we would still like to know if she is going to be the person to have the last 7 months of the term. I'd like to know what her vision is, since it is the legislature's responsibility. As I said before, there's important things that lay before us, the cases that Eric was working on. I mean, I'm impressed by Ms. Underwood's resume. You know, the fact that she clerked for Thurgood Marshall is an impressive thing in my mind.
Yes.
And we all know what Thurgood Marshall means to us. So,
So
this is not a questioning of Ms. Underwood's, credentials. It's just the legislature doing its job.
You got to go through the process.
Right.
And I wish you well in that process, and I probably will tune in just to see it live streamed online.
So let me just, I'm sorry, Greg, let me just finish. Okay. So anyone who's interested, you have till, I believe, 5 o'clock today to submit your resume with a cover letter to my counsel, Kathleen O'Keefe. And then the interviews will be on Tuesday and Wednesday of next week. The qualifications are, the Constitution basically says you only have to be 30 years old, a U.S. citizen, and a resident of the state for 5 years. But we also want someone to have some knowledge of the law, because the Constitution doesn't require you to be a lawyer, to be Attorney General. But, you know, but how law and government works is really what we're asking people to do.
And for the purposes of this show will air on May. We're taping it on May 10th. The show will air May 11th. We're taping this on May 11th.
Okay.
The show will air tomorrow, which is May 12th.
Right.
So those who will hear it, it will be too late too for late. Them to
but they
submit
can tune
the resume.
But your listeners but can tune in for
tune
the
in
interview.
For the interviews right. process. And then going forward, if somebody wants to run for the position, they can understand are the qualifications.
Those are the qualifications. Right. And if somebody's looking to run, they should come to the Democratic Convention, because that's where the politics of the office will take place.
Okay, very good. And we may play the show over and over again just to have people understand what the process was, because after the process, you're going to have the naysayers say, well, you should have left it vacant. But now everybody will understand you have a constitutional
responsibility
to to fill that vacancy. And then there's going to be an election coming up in another 7 months or so, and people could decide then. So we want to talk to you, let's see, got a topic, raise the age. Mm-hmm. Tell us about raise the age.
Well, before we changed the law last year, New York and North Carolina were the only two states who prosecuted 16 and 17-year-olds as adults. And one of the things I said when I became speaker, I would feel, you know, my speakership would be in vain if we didn't start to reform a criminal justice system that has really been not a just system, particularly when it comes to people of color, and raise the age was one. We need to continue to do that in bail reform, discovery, speedy trial, solitary confinement. All of these things I would really like to see accomplished, when my days as speaker are done. But in my mind, I said, a 16 or 17-year-old, they can't drive, they can't vote, they can't defend this country, they can't smoke. So if we're saying in that vein, they're not responsible enough, so why would we want to, if they made a mistake or did something wrong, hold them to the same standards as an adult? And so I'm happy that we were able to make some changes that, unless it's in the most violent of instances, and even then, in my personal preference, I still think a 16 or 17-year-old is still in their formative positions, as your brain doesn't really mature until you're in your 20s. But in this world, you had to compromise since we have Senate Republicans. But most instances, any person who gets in trouble, 16, 17-year-olds, will end up in family court with service intervention and things like that, rather than having an introduction into the criminal court, because we found that when young people, there's a higher incidence of young people becoming career criminals when they're sent through the adult criminal justice system.
You're listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters, with us, very special guest, Assembly Speaker, New York State Assembly Speaker, Carl Hastings. We're here discussing the initiatives in the New York State Assembly. Now, there was a push to raise the minimum wage increase. Mm-hmm. And can you tell us where that is, if that's happened or is it going to happen?
Well, it was, again, in the world of compromise, when I first became speaker in 2015, we passed the bill that we wanted to see the minimum wage in the state go to $15 an hour. And then a year later, or maybe later that year, the governor joined us in that crusade. So then in 2016, we were able to pass a bill that would have the minimum wage raised in stages and also by region. But here in New York City, the minimum wage went to 11. Right now it's 13, and December 31st of this year it'll be raised to $15 an hour. But in the suburban counties and upstate, it'll be at a slower pace, particularly to catch up to $15 an hour. The Senate Republicans were not very supportive of raising the minimum wage, but this was a compromise. But we particularly, New York City is the most expensive, city in the world. And not to say that $15 an hour is a good thing and allows you, but when you kind of raise the floor, it moves everybody up, and you as a union leader know how important that is.
So let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. You said in suburban counties, mm-hmm. the increase will be slower.
It'll be a little slower.
But what if you have a chain like McDonald's? McDonald's in New York.
Well, McDonald's, they have a little different thing, because the governor he put together a wage board through the Department of Labor, and so fast food workers kind of have their own schedule. Even though right now it's $13 an hour, I think fast food workers is a little more. I think it's $13 and change. I could be a little off on that, but this was done previously, and the change in the law didn't affect that. So fast food workers make a little bit more than the minimum wage now.
Well, let me talk to you about the public housing, New York City public housing. You have a lot in your district, and the funding,
including I believe the second biggest in the city, in Eden.
Second biggest in the city, Edenwald. Yes. So I remember seeing you at Edenwald before too. Tell us about the process, because I believe it was 3 years ago, New York State gave $100 million to start funding NYCHA, and I believe you gave more this year, but you've been consistent. And I know the governor has gotten criticism because he had made it clear that he wanted to make sure that money was earmarked for NYCHA. It would be spent wisely. And there was a lot of criticism. People accused him of not wanting to give the money. But I know you and I have conversations, and you made a commitment that money was going to be given to NYCHA.
Well, I'll say this. So when I became speaker, and I guess, Greg, representing 5 housing developments, I don't live too far from the Edenwald housing development. Grew up in there. I have family there. So the public housing developments are very important to me. Just recently, I had lunch with the presidents of all 5 of my housing developments because I like for them to tell me what's going on. Our residents tell me what's going on, but I like to hear from them because I like to work with them and all the capital improvements that we've tried to do. So in 2015, we provided $100 million, and that was to, because the city council does it as well, and so we put forth the money, and it helped to do with anything. People wanted security. People wanted lighting. I think in some developments in Brooklyn, they were able to purchase new refrigerators and ovens for people, just trying to improve the quality of life. And then when the governor put forward the housing plan, again, the assembly, we said that any housing plan should always address NYCHA. And then there was an additional $200 million that came through out of the housing MOU. And then this year in the budget, we put forth another $250 million. So I'd say in the 4 budgets since I've been speaker, the state is now putting forward $550 million towards trying to help our brothers and sisters in the NYCHA developments.
That's very good. So people understand, without politics, we just 2 of us talking, no politics involved, and that money was earmarked for NYCHA. I saw the governor take a beating over this a couple of years ago, and I said, it's unfair. It's like he's being punished for doing a good deed.
Right.
Yes. So what are your priorities for this year's or coming up? What do you see? What are your priorities?
Well, as I said, I mentioned earlier, I'm a little disappointed we weren't able to get the criminal justice reforms done. The Senate Republicans, who have a different view of criminal justice than we do, and the governor as well. The governor's in the same place as we are. That remains one of the larger priorities. Even if we can't get it done, you know, there's an election coming up. There's a Democratic Senate. I believe that the more likely that the things that are important to the progressive world or to us as Democrats would be easier done. You know, particularly the bail, which is, you know, bail, and for all of your listeners, bail was only supposed to ensure that people showed up. It was supposed to be insurance to show that people would show up to court. It wasn't supposed to be some predetermined way to keep you in jail. This has caused people to lose their jobs. And remember, most, even people in Rikers Island, I think 70% of the people in Rikers Island have been convicted of nothing. And some people are there because they just don't, their families don't have the ability to come with a few hundred dollars, you know, for bail. So bail in some regard has been allowed to become used in a discriminatory way and a way to pre-jail people who haven't even been convicted. So I would say the criminal reforming the criminal justice system is at the top of the list. We have women's reproductive rights at the top of the list. We passed child victims. We want to see some education, election reforms. We want to see housing rent regulations is set to expire next year, but we're going to pass that as well. So we want to pass all of the bills that are priorities to members of the Assembly and hope that the Senate, even though they sometimes can be polar opposites, will understand that these are the things that improve the lives of even, you know, some of the most vulnerable people amongst us, and that they'll do the right thing. And if not, you know, I hope that people see that and then give us a Democratic Senate, and then you'll see some of these priorities hopefully will be passed.
Now, I just wanted to talk about one more topic. I think we have time for that. Stricter gun laws.
Mm-hmm.
New York State has one of the strictest gun laws in the country. I think that's why we've been so successful in not having assault weapons on our right. streets and in the schools.
Right. But the never being wanting to be one to, you know, kick the can or throw the ball into someone else in the blinking. But until the federal government really understands that there's no need for these type of weapons, we're going to continue to see these mass shootings. You know, I'm not one, I don't really believe in guns and even the guns that do end up here in New York, because here in the city of New York, it's virtually impossible to get a license to carry a gun. But most of the illegal guns that end up in here were legal, started out legal and somewhere else. But I just don't understand, and I've said this jokingly, you know, the Constitution gave us the right to bear arms, but part of that was because we were still wondering if the British were coming. And I'm saying the British aren't coming. They're our friends. And so we have to understand that if you compare...
But somebody's joking. Maybe the Russians are.
Right? That's true. But if they're coming, I don't think the guns are going to be what's going to stop it.
No.
So, but if you look at other industrial democratic nations, Japan, France... I just say to your listeners, go look and see how many people die by the hands of guns, and then compare that to how many people die by the hands of guns in every hour here, you know, in the United States. There's no need to allow people to have a gun that will let off 60 bullets in a minute. Even for people that want to hunt, you know, it's like, I don't know what you feel like you need to hunt, that you have to let off 60 bullets, you know, in a minute. And I just think, until we really do something about allowing people to carry guns, I'm one that I'd be okay if there were no guns in this country. But I understand what the Constitution says. But if, as long as we just allow people to carry guns, and then the federal government also wanted to have a reciprocity agreement where, even though we have strict gun laws here, they want to allow people who have the ability to carry a gun to just bypass the laws here in New York. And you know what? It might be today. It might be tomorrow. It might be the day after, week after, another mass shooting is coming.
And then it will happen in New York.
Yes.
Well, thank you. Last 15 seconds. Is there anything you want to say in 15 seconds?
I just want to say to your listeners, thank you for listening to me. And, you know, summer is coming. I just hope that everyone has a safe and enjoyable summer.
Thank you. I'm Gregory Floyd, President of Local 237 Teamsters. Our very special guest was Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie's New York State Assembly. Thank you for coming on Reach Out.
Thank you. Thank you, Greg.
Thanks for listening to Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237. Join us each and every Saturday night at 7, right here on AM 970, The Answer.